Hello and welcome back to another episode of Binge List and Box Office Hits, the podcast about all things film, TV and streaming, with your host, Shannon Holiday, and me, Letitia Thomas.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Binge List and Box Office Hits, the podcast about all things film, TV and streaming. I'm your host, Shannon Holiday, and I'm joined in the studio once again with Letitia Thomas. How are we doing today, Tish?
How am I?
How am I? It's a very loaded question.
There's
today.
There's always a loaded question. You scare me with
How
that
long
one.
Have you got is the real how, answer.
Yeah, is this a therapy session or is this a podcast?
Sit down. Lay back and tell me your tale.
Oh, I could tell you a tale. The world's on fire.
Oh my God, yes.
I'm having a meltdown.
We're sweating in the studio today.
Also that. The world's on fire. We're on fire.
Politically, yes.
And I've been doing great. I've been spiraling.
Just with the way the world is, I think, is just the reaction to that.
Yeah, that and just everything else in general.
Yeah, you've got a little bit going on. In your personal life.
It's just everything. It's just like and too much burnout, tired.
Yeah.
What's there to live for now?
It's funny. Well, it's not funny.
I've got nothing exciting happening. It's just whatever.
But
I'm okay, by the way.
No one needs to check in on me.
But you did ask how I am and now you're getting.
This isn't Are You Okay Day. We don't need to have a follow-up. We don't follow up.
I hate that question. They go, how are you? I'm
do you want? Do you just want yes, I'm okay? Or do you want the real answer?
I'm allergic to small talk. I don't know how to do it.
I love whenever I come pick you up and I'm like, hey, how you doing? And you're like, tired. I'm like, Tish? I need more than that to work off.
Like, what do you want?
We're all tired all the time. That's Life magazine.
Has that always been a catchphrase for you? Or is
it
that just because I'm around all the time? You keep using
it's one of my older ones. I don't use it as much, but I'm going to start putting it in my repertoire again.
I think there's some slang we should bring back, definitely, that's Australian that we've forgotten.
Yeah. I miss the ocker.
I want to call people moles again.
I think we should. I think
we're
should
bring
start.
It back.
Let's bring it back. 2025, the year of the mole. It's a great term. It is.
It is.
I love watching 70s Australian dramas or comedies and it's used in there and you're that's a great saying.
God,
I love it.
What is it? I can't think. There's an iconic TV series.
Are you thinking Puberty Blues?
That's the one.
There's an original movie.
And
from
the movie. I watched that in school.
Perfect. Yeah, same. I've seen it a couple of times. What does that mean?
Back for panel van.
What's happening in the panel
van. I don't know about that. And this was in 2014. So that conversation wasn't. And she's like, yeah. And we're like, cool.
It's more hectic in the movie.
It's pretty
confronting. I imagine it's exactly what it was like in the 70s in Australia back then.
Yeah.
Full on. Great movie.
I was going to say we've come a long way. And then I thought about the political climate. I said, no, we haven't.
No. It's just changed. It just looks different now.
Oh, God.
But it's mostly the same. Anyway, how's your week been movie-wise, TV shows? What have we been watching?
I've been watching some TV, but it does not change the tone of where we're at. Unfortunately, that is not the pivot you want it to be.
I was trying to switch it up. I don't know if you noticed
that. What did you watch? And I was like, you don't want me to answer that.
Yes, I do. Let's see where we go with this.
I think I finished probably Territory last week.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe just after we did the podcast, kind of enjoyed it. It is what it is. It's sort of melodramatic. It's entertaining enough. It's not perfect. I need the next season. If they have one, I'll watch it. But
it was okay.
You're sweating.
I'm sweating. I'm trying to wipe it off my brow. Sweat. I still want to see it because it's Australian. It's pretty high budget. I want to check it out. It's a Netflix-backed thing. But you just don't reckon it's this amazing kind of series that...
It's not that it's not amazing. I really enjoyed it. I watched it pretty quickly. It's just I didn't, you know how sometimes you watch something and you're like, oh, none of these characters are special to me and that Yeah, it's that kind of thing where it's that's fine. But everyone acts, fantastically in it. It's helmed by Anna Torv, and she's always
incredible. Oh, I love her. So I love her work. So I'll still see.
Yeah,
it.
It's not.
This will happen in the break, in the summer break. Yeah. I'll check it out then. Well, funnily fact, we've only got one more episode. This is the penultimate episode of season two, everyone.
Oh no!
We have a big old celebratory wrap up and the best of worst of 1989 next week.
You struggled with that, and that was the year you were born. So that's
I had to remember back that far.
All right, and then so I finished watching that, and then I saw on Netflix they had released this TV series called One Night, which is another Australian one. And I was like, oh, finally, because I tried to watch this. It came out last year when I was in Europe and I was like, oh, I can't watch it. And it was on Paramount Plus and there's really nothing on Paramount Plus in Australia that feels worth getting it.
What do you mean? You don't want to watch Aussie Shore?
I never watched Jersey Shore, so no.
Geordie Shore?
Whatever.
They're all the same.
They're all the same, right?
Well, I have watched it, but I'll get to that later.
So I was like, okay, cool. And then came back, tried to find it. Literally, they'd taken it off Paramount and then taken it off everything in Australia. And I was like, thanks, guys. Really, way to bury your content. Anyway, it had popped up on Netflix. So it's starring Yael Stone from famously Orange is the New Black, Nicole De Silva, famously Wentworth, and then Jodie Whittaker, Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Also some random prison drama. So they've all done that. So good for them, I guess. They're just rounding them up from separate ones. But this was really cool. It was set now and it tells the story of three women who are like best friends in their like early, like about 19 through high school. And then something happens one night to them. And 20 years later, one of them's writing a book detailing that one night. And they're all sort of back in this small town that they grew up in. And just how does that sort of them being confronted by their past, like, unravel them, and what has it done to them for 20 years? And it's very well done, but quite dark.
Netflix now. Yeah, okay.
Very.
It's like
worth watch.
Season one of Yellow Jackets. I mean, that got eventually sold off Paramount to Netflix, but season two is still on Paramount. So
yeah, go figure.
Good fun for anyone trying to continue that series.
Yeah, but I'm very good, but I'm quite dark.
I'm guessing the event is one of quite them is, dark.
Sexually assaulted.
Yeah, I assume.
And
it just kind of
unraveling that, but very well done. A bit hard to watch at times. But that sort of stuff's always hard to watch because you go, oh, comes for all of us at one point or another in one form or another. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Topical, given the political climate, but no, good watch.
Given a topical, thematical movie. Like similar. I watched Woman of the Hour.
Oh, did you watch it?
I watched it last night. Yeah. I was on a movie binge yesterday.
Far out.
Three. It was good. It was good. And I think Anna Kendrick's directorial debut was really strong. I just think the movie itself was a bit choppy.
Mm-hmm.
It's in what the core focus didn't make sense to the narrative. If that makes sense.
Completely.
If you came in with it with blind, not knowing, you know, Anna Kendrick's probably in it or she directed it and you went, okay, I'm just going to watch a movie blindsided, you'd probably be pretty confused as to what the through line is. There's a few reasons. Is like it focuses heavily on the gaming show, the dating game, and we know that he becomes like the dating game killer. Like that's the nickname they give him.
Yep.
And I get that. But it becomes too much of a focus comparative to what is happening around it because they do have flashbacks, flash forwards at different times as well, which can be really choppy to the audience trying to understand this story. And then there's I think it's like a B or C storyline with the lady in the audience who recognizes him.
Yeah.
But that also doesn't go anywhere. And I get that. Like that's the point of that storyline. It kind of ends and then obviously he gets to keep doing what he's doing, but you kind of also give us that ending in the postscript. You explain it. So that whole storyline, it's just a double up. Don't think it's perfect, but it's good. It's very good. It's on Netflix.
It
was entertained and I understood where it came from, but it was just a bit choppy.
The way that this show did it that I just seen is like phenomenal. The way it like, because it's about something, but it's also not like, it's not heavy-handed. It's just like, hey, this event happened to these people and how does this entire town react? So it's everyone that was involved or is now involved and it's their sort of perspective on, like, the one issue and they have time jumps in it as well, but it's done in the way where they're remembering their past self. So sometimes, like, say I'm sitting having a chat to you now, it'll cut and it'll be like the younger version of them, because in their mind they're still them at times. Yep. And it's still like that's very much. Yeah, it's really well done. I think one of the best series I've seen that tackles an issue like that without putting, I mean, it blames the right people, but it's not like,
it's not so forceful.
It's not so forceful. It's like, hey, this is a really complicated thing that happens in people's lives, as opposed to like, it happens and it's bad and you know, men are bad. It's not that. It's just like, hey,
that was the issue with
these things can affect.
Woman of the Hour was it was trying to tackle too many social injustices. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously there was the issue with the main guy, right? Like Al Kaye or whatever his name was, doing what he was doing. But then Anna Kendrick was also trying to tackle the imbalance of, you know, where women and men sit in the 70s, because that whole first scene when she's reading the lines and they're not even looking at her, they're talking about her and she's in the room. I get it, but I think you're trying to tackle too much in one film.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of time.
You know, and it was only an hour and a half movie. And then a lot of chunk of it is just the dating game itself.
Mm-hmm.
So it does juggle a lot.
Yeah.
Not everything sticks, but I still think she did a darn good job of directing what she did. Mm. And it, especially knowing what she did afterwards with the proceeds of the directing part. I think that was, you know, hats off to her for doing that. Good things. It's good. It's not a bad movie. It just, a few tweaks.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe tighter in the screenplay or something.
Mm-hmm. That's Woman of the Hour. Yeah, I didn't watch much else apart from topical stuff. I had to obviously watch a bunch of Meryl and I loved it.
Well, I mean, we did watch.
But we watched.
What did we watch?
We watched My Old Ass.
Yes, we watched My Old Ass.
I really enjoyed it, actually.
I thought it was a really, really good, touching coming-of-age film.
Sometimes they don't feel, like, enjoyable watching it as an adult, but this one, like...
It did. It was... I was a little bit confronted at the start by two things. Not confronted, but, like, I was like, oh, how are we going to go with this? With the... because she's a very... Are they Gen Z now? Yeah. What are they up to?
She would be Gen Z.
Yeah.
It's like the younger end of Gen Z, because Gen Alpha is like the kids, new, yeah, like okay. actual
well,
kids.
Gen Z, I think. It's a lot of like colloquialisms out of Gen Z. And I was like, oh, how much is it going to be in here? But she has an arc, like she has a growth arc. So it's not so much, it's showed heavily at the start and less at the end.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I appreciate that. And also, as we were speaking to you earlier, I was like, how does a modern day Hollywood movie showcase that this character might be a lesbian? That's all right. We'll put a cap on her backwards. You don't have to think then. You just know.
You don't. I don't wear hats often.
No. She had the uniform on.
She had the uniform on. She had definitely the did. On. I had the uniform on in Lesbos. Have you seen that photo of me?
No, but you can definitely give me a crack later and show me that one. But just to give the audience a bit of a kind of an understanding of what this character might represent, she's wearing the right outfit. And she had a bit of a chuckle at that, and we spoke about it earlier. But I think...
I'm glad you picked up on it too.
Of course I did.
I don't know. I don't know what other people pick up on anymore. I'm too in the trenches.
I might be a white male, but I've been hanging out with you for quite a number of years, Tish. Come on.
I don't wear hats. You keep trying to get me to wear hats.
I'm going to buy you a hat.
I have a hat.
Oh, damn it.
It's Golden Gate hat.
I think Maisie Stella did a fantastic job in this role. And then the adult version of her character rocks up after a mushroom trip in the woods. Who's played by Aubrey Plaza.
That's beautiful.
And she does a fantastic job of playing the older version of Maisie's character, Elliot.
I love this film. I love that it's kind of, it's a coming of age film, and it's the idea of like, you go on a bad trip, you meet your like older self. And
what
then
what would you ask them?
What would you ask them, and what information would they kind of give you? But it was just a really beautiful, like, I don't know, like letter to your young self in a way, which.
It's like, appreciate your family, appreciate the time that you've got with them. Your brothers might seem annoying, but do what you can. And then she grows to.
And
create bonds like, with the family and obviously herself as well.
Yeah, like obviously she gives herself a warning not to tell everyone how it ends, but she gives herself a warning like, hey, don't go do this, don't go down this route. But the once you find out the why of that, it's such a heartbreaking
because
you just want to like protect the younger version of yourself. Like you have sympathy for them in a way that you don't your adult self. Like your adult self's over it. You're like, it's fine, we got through that. But you like look back at your younger self and you're like, oh, you don't deserve that. You're too young
to
have it happen.
That scene where they are confronting all those issues towards the end, I thought that was fantastic.
Oh, the acting in it is superb.
Really
I was
superb
like,
between both the girls.
Let's let Aubrey Plaza do more drama. I know she's done a fair bit of drama.
She's done a bit,
but I think she's doing a lot at the moment, and it's good. Like
she's doing really well.
She's doing really well. Yeah. Oh, speaking of, actually.
Yes, I need to see Safety Not Guaranteed. Thank you for the DVD. She's in that apparently with Jake Johnson from New Girl.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to check that out. Thank you for letting me borrow it.
I watched it years ago. I think it was on TV.
I'll probably watch it tonight, to be honest.
And then
later on.
I think I was rewatching it and I tweeted out about how great it is. This was when I was active on Twitter. And
I mean, I've heard about this.
Aubrey Plaza is incredible in this film. And then this guy in it, I can't think of his name.
He's in Deadpool.
Is he?
He's the taxi driver.
Anyway, he liked my tweet.
Did
but
he?
It was not about him being good in the film, so I felt awkward about it. But
he's in it. So that's, you know, that's your connection to Hollywood.
I'm Twitter friends with Sir Gordon Ramsay.
Really?
Do you not know this?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay. So I went through a phase. I was about like 17.
Cooking phase?
No. I was just watching a lot of Hotel Hell. And I was
that
just
show
having-
is really good though.
Yeah, I love when he yells at stupid people.
so do I.
And I was like, hey dude, like your honesty is admirable. Something like that. Can we be buddies? I said buddies. And then he followed me and I was like, I got to follow him back. I wasn't following him.
Can we be buddies, but only you may follow me.
So yeah, so now I'm Twitter friends with Gordon
Ramsay. That's fantastic.
That is the end of the interactions, but he follows me on Twitter.
Hey, it means he sees your tweets.
I did think about that once. And I was like, oh boy, I hope he follows a lot of people.
Oh, good luck, Gordon. Oh, good luck.
I don't tweet much. I just look.
Last film I watched yesterday, I wrapped up watching Salem's Lot.
Okay.
Which is an adaptation of Stephen King novel from way back in the day. It was dropped on Binge about 2-ish weeks ago, and I watched the first hour about a week ago, and it was very late, and I was like, nah, I'm not going to take in this second hour. I'll be dead asleep on the couch. So I watched the last hour of it yesterday. Now, I don't usually do that. I don't usually watch movies in two parts, but it wasn't exactly thrilling either at the same time. It's fine. I think a lot of it was left on the chopping room floor.
Cutting room floor.
That's the one. Thank you.
Left on the chopping block and the cutting room floor.
I just amalgamated two sentences.
I know, there's a phrase for that, but I can't think what it's
My
called.
Brain.
No, it's like an actual thing.
Yeah. Yeah, like apparently there was a 3-hour cut of this, which probably would have done a little bit better. It could have probably gone more heavy-handed on some of the maybe gore or horror elements because it was pretty tame. The character of Barlow, which is the actual big vampire villain in this story, is modeled off Nosferatu, which I'm pretty sure in the actual original novel, he just looks like a regular human, I guess, to a degree, but just dresses like someone from the 1920s instead. Because it's in the 70s, 1970s. So he just looks a little bit out of place. So just to model off the Nosferatu look, just so everyone kind of knows, oh, look, it's a like the bad vampire. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I've seen parts of Nosferatu. I don't think I ever finished it.
Neither have I. But everyone knows what that Dracula looks like, that particular character. This was a similar film to Borderlands where it was filmed back in 2021.
Oh.
And then it was shelved for a number of years, especially released to theaters. It got delayed or pushed because it was competing with something else back in 2022. Then they pushed it back because of the SAG-AFTRA strikes. And then I think Stephen King himself tweeted and said, I don't know why this film is not out yet. I don't know why it's shelved. I've seen it. It's not like embarrassingly bad or anything. So I don't know why it's out. And then within a month, they had a date release, like a release date ready.
I love that. Stephen King's like, I'm just going to force your hand.
He's like, yeah, can you just put this out already? So, yeah. And then obviously they put it out to HBO, which is obviously Binge here in Australia. Yeah. So it went on there.
I forgot we had Binge. I say we. You pay for it.
You're on it. It's got a lot of good stuff on there. HBO. So.
Yeah.
Not a terrible film. Could have been better. I gave it a strong 2.5. It's very mid. Like, you're not going to be offended by watching it, but you're probably going to forget it as soon as it's over.
I think I'll, I don't think I'll bother.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's more pressing things to watch in the meantime. But if it's on, someone's like, hey, I'm watching Salem's Lot and you're in the room. Probably don't leave the room. Just watch it.
Just watch it.
Just sit through it. There's way worse films out there. Way worse. And that's really been my week so far. The rest has been for the main topic.
Yeah.
Which I've watched a couple of ready for that.
I didn't get much watched this week.
Not else?
No, I've been busy. I've been writing and stuff. And
are we getting towards a structured piece of literature?
Well, It's not literature, for one.
It's all art.
We're getting somewhere. We're getting somewhere.
I'm just kidding.
I know.
How is it going? How's
it going? It's good. Yeah. Had a meeting on Friday.
Yep.
And getting into it.
That's good. Yeah. That's good.
I had a meeting this week too for that. I forgot. That's why I've been busy.
Yeah, I remember you saying, because I came in and saw you one day during the week and you're like, oh, damn, I've got to go to a meeting after this. I just want to go home.
Just, yeah.
It clearly went well, though.
It's a Zoom meeting, but yeah okay. Like, I'm tired.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I know. That's default.
That's default for me.
Default. I think it's about the time for us to get into that topic today. And we have decided to land on the favorite Meryl Streep.
Look, I figured we couldn't finish two seasons of this podcast without talking about the Queen, Meryl Streep.
I'm surprised. And honestly, we haven't really covered many of her films in other episodes either, to be honest.
Surprisingly not.
We've kind of skipped over a little bit.
She's done so much stuff. I haven't even scratched the surface.
Well, I thought I got through a couple. And then as you said this morning was like, oh, I've only done 13%. I've done 6. Between us, we haven't even hit like 20% yet. She's in a lot of films. She's in a lot of projects.
Some of her TV as well.
Murders in the Building.
And she was in Big Little Lies.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Mother-in-laws. I think mother-in-laws.
Reese Witherspoon.
Was it hers? I can't remember. I haven't seen Big Little Lies since it was coming out, which has been quite a while now.
It's been
now.
Quite a number of years.
But yeah, I couldn't believe when she was in that. I was like, what is happening in the world of TV? Like, it's peaked. We have Meryl Streep. She barely did TV when she was like starting out, which tells you
TV has changed now though. I mean, the landscape's changed. I was saying, Only Murders, but even that's getting like huge names in it. Mm. And that's just one example. Like she's obviously in seasons 3 and 4 of that, but already like Martin Short and Steve Martin starring in that, just a TV show, a comedy TV show. You never would have heard of that in like the 90s or early 2000s.
No, you were TV stars or you were movie stars and you almost they didn't never really crossed over. You had to pick a career and hope that you got into movies.
Yeah, they were very different. Yeah, movies was the prestige. Like, there's a bunch of people in television, but only the best move up to movies. Yeah. Yeah. Now it's just so interchangeable.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, the medium has changed. I'm kind of glad. It gives us, like, I guess because we consume it so much more at home. They've had to change the medium, you know, and people get to choose what they want. It's not just broadcast out on 5 different channels.
Yeah, I know for sure. But then I miss the jobs that existed. So.
Well, yes. where did you want to start for her lustrous career?
What was your first Meryl Streep film?
My first. Now, I'm going through her list of things. It would probably be, honestly, The Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah.
Because I was probably, when did it come out? Like 2010? 2006? Wow, I didn't know it was that old.
Yeah.
Incredible. Okay, I would have been 16. I think, this would have been one of my first films because, yet again, I wasn't hugely into films when I was 16. So I hadn't watched an earlier catalogue. And The Devil Wears Prada was huge when it came out.
Oh, it was massive.
2006, sorry.
I don't think I saw it in 2006. Mm. My mum and that had probably seen it. But I think I saw it a few years later, so I think I was about 12 or 13, and I you know, heard my mum be like, oh, you know, Meryl Streep. I was like, okay. And then I watched that film, and it was like the first kind of adult film that I'd watched. And I don't mean like adult in that it's crazy, but like adult in that it wasn't for children. Mm. And I fell in love with it. I was like, this is cinema. Who is Meryl Streep?
Yeah.
She's just like formidable in that role.
It's like a resurgence.
Mm-hmm.
Back into the industry was the start with The Devil Wears Prada. Yeah. Like there was definitely like the
that's all.
80s, 90s, like, and then a bit of a gap, and then this was her hit again. Yeah, she plays this so well, and it's like, is she like a B word or not? You just like, is she yes? Is she not?
She is, but we love her. Yeah, you know?
Anne Hathaway puts up with a lot, and Emily Blunt as well. Like they go through it with her, but like the acting is just top notch.
You know, the twins want the manuscript. She's like, what do you mean? The unpublished manuscript of Harry Potter. Go get it,
yeah.
But, oh, man.
Wild.
Yeah, I was like, this is cinema and this is Meryl. And I was just like.
But like, now that I've seen a couple more of her films from earlier, she always had it. It's not something that she kind of built up through her career. She was
always had it.
Incredible throughout her entire catalog of movies.
Yeah, I watched I've watched a couple of like her old ones. I watched Heartburn a few years ago, which is her and Jack Nicholson, and it's based on the like novel by Nora Ephron about her actual marriage breaking up. So it's kind of autobiographical, but not like strongly. And that was a great performance with her and Jack Nicholson, just two people in a relationship that, you know, is sort of doomed, but they're still sticking it out. And then that got her to do, I think, Julie and Julia with Nora Ephron later on in her career, where she plays like the cook on TV that Amy Adams is like trying to live up to. It's less of a Meryl film, that one, but she's sort of in it. Then I watched Sophie's Choice this week, and what a film that is.
Tell me about Sophie's Choice.
Holy crap. If you've never seen it, go watch it, come back, or just get it spoiled. Either way, but like whatever. This is fantastic. So I knew that this was like a Holocaust film.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, so it must, and I'd seen a couple of stills and I just assumed that the whole thing took place like during the war. Very much not the case. It's told later on when she's in America, she's got this boyfriend and they're madly in love, and she's sort of just like the life of the party, and this guy moves in, he's a writer, and it's like one of those big New York houses where like you had boarding houses where you'd kind of have a room, and they have this like this complicated relationship, all three of them, where it's very much, you know, Meryl and one guy are in love, and then he's the writer's like friends of, but like also kind of has a crush on Meryl's character, so it's sort of this tension, but they're just all sort of having a lot of fun, but she's very like clearly broken because you know that she went through the war. She was in Auschwitz. She's Polish. So you're like, what was really going on there? And towards it, once it's all unraveling and everything like that, she gets closer to the writer friend. I can't think of his name. It's got a weird name. But she becomes friends with him, and then it gets into like what really happened in Auschwitz and like what was her choice kind of thing. And I don't know if you want me to spoil it, but it's hectic.
No, leave it for now. Yeah. I will see this.
So it gets to sort of that point, but just watching the film is so fascinating. She does like an accent the whole time, whether it's a good Polish accent or not, I don't know. But it's good in that it's not her accent, whether it's good, someone else tell me.
That one listener from Poland. Yeah, sure. Let us know.
You tell us, because I don't know. You tell us. But just the way she plays a character that has so much, like is putting up such a front, is fascinating to then see her during the actual war, where she's just almost completely different, not in that her personality is different, but just like this facade that she's putting on to face the world is just so different. But it's really enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, right.
I mean, obviously until it gets really dark, but
that's the drama for you.
That's the drama for you. But yeah, it's a fantastic performance. And you're like, oh, no wonder she became like Meryl Streep.
Well, speaking of that, yeah, I'm going back even further now. I watched a film recently, because that was 1982. I watched one this week from 1978, The Deer Hunter.
Oh, I've got this. I've told you I've got this at home.
Yeah, you've got this one.
It was that had adaptation.
Yeah.
That I have to watch, but just didn't get around to it this week.
That's the Charlie Kaufman one. Yeah.
But I haven't seen Being John Malkovich. Yeah, right. So
it's like, which one do I watch first? Deer Hunter. So she's quite young in this, 1978. She would have been about 30, I think, roughly when this one came out. Yep. And it's one of the first Vietnam War movies, and it's got Robert De Niro and Christopher Walken as two friends. There's a third friend as well, but he's like not a big actor. I forget his name. John Savage, I think, off the top of my head. And it's a long film. It's 3 hours long. The first kind of like act hour is them just kind of like living out their life and going to a wedding, the wedding, and them just like enjoying life with their partners and girls, and Meryl Streep's dating Christopher Walken's character, but also Robert De Niro's got eyes for her as well. So at the wedding, they're looking at each other with those eyes, like looking across the room for each other when like she's dancing with Christopher Walken, and they obviously share a drink, and there's definitely sparks there as well, but nothing's kind of like happens from there. The boys go out on hunting trips and stuff as well, and it's all like, you know, hunky-dory, everything's fine and happy. Then the second act of the film cuts straight to them being in Vietnam, the three boys that are leaving, and it gets very, very full-on war film style stuff, and it's got one of those iconic scenes that everyone kind of knows, the Russian roulette scene. Pretty hectic, and the three boys have to go through a lot, and they end up splitting up. Like they all kind of get out of Vietnam, but they all split up. The first one to come home is Robert De Niro's character, and then he comes back and kind of tries to adjust back into life with normal life, and it's really hard for him. And he kind of goes along and sees Meryl Streep's character, but she feels conflicted because one of the Christopher Walken characters hasn't come back yet. So it's a really, she does a really, really great drama piece in this where she's conflicted about her feelings for Robert De Niro's character while also still likes him, but also feels guilty. Yeah. And I won't go into what else happens in the film, but yeah, she does a really good supporting actress role in this film. And yeah, she looks incredibly young. It's wild. You're like, that is Meryl Streep. But she looks like, yeah, crazy young. Good film. Really good film.
I know, it is crazy because we've seen her sort of the end older, of her yeah. career. Like we haven't, she's not one we've watched grow up kind yeah. of thing. And then you watch these, you're like, wow, you've had it all
yeah.
along.
Yeah. Like, that's what I mean. Like she was great in this. There's one particular scene where she works at like the local convenience store, right? Just as her job. He comes to like pick her up and she's just crying and he's like, what's up? Like, tell me what's up. And she's like, no, just like not now. And she's just the scene between the two of them, the dynamic. Yeah, she's always had it. It was really well done. What I want, like, Death Becomes Her.
Yes. Have you seen?
I have seen. I really liked it.
Yeah, me too. I watched it very recently.
Yeah. It's a comedy horror, light so horror, camp. But more comedy.
So camp.
It's
I
very
love
camp.
It.
It's it needs to be appreciated more, I think.
Yeah, we've lost the appreciation for high camp films and we yeah. need to bring them back because there's something about it.
It's her, it's Goldie Hawn, and it's Bruce Willis.
And God, do they yeah. do fantastic work.
Bruce
in this
Willis
film.
Is such a beta male in this too. Oh,
yeah.
He plays it really well. Yeah.
Yeah, I loved just the fun that they have in it, you and they tell. Know how to play the comedy up.
Mm-hmm.
Just that perfect amount, you know, yep. and just, oh God, how they go at each other is just
that's what I mean. The
so petty, much fun.
The pettiness is perfect. Oh, it's played so well.
So good.
They are, I think we've spoken about this before, they are remaking this movie, which I don't know. I feel like don't touch it.
I feel like don't touch it.
It's quite.
Because
it's set and you'll lose that camp. You know you will.
It's like watching the old Beetlejuice and then the new
yeah,
one.
Yeah, it's you, the some, practice, some sparks
there's something
missing. It's,
that really can't be about practical effects that yeah. don't quite hold up, but that doesn't matter because it's a comedy.
Yeah.
Whereas right. like when you make it too realistic with like bad CGI.
I just looked up.
Doesn't work.
Because I was trying to find a little bit more information about the remake. And I just put in the title of the movie, Death Becomes Her. The first thing people also ask, why is Death Becomes Her a queer classic?
Because it's camp.
Because it's camp.
Because it's camp.
Because it's goddamn camp.
There's nothing that the gays love more than camp.
Yeah. It's a fun film. So we'll see how we go with a remake because I'm not entirely sure.
Speaking of the gays in films and Meryl, Mamma Mia.
Yes. I surprisingly loved the first one.
Yep.
Didn't love so much the second one.
I haven't seen the second one. I have no desire. I probably will at some point.
Okay.
But.
So the first one, you know the story, right? It's about Meryl Streep and the three guys that mm-hmm. she had a whirlwind time mm-hmm. with back in the day, and she's got a kid, but she's not sure which one it is.
Yes,
so the daughter,
Sophie and Donna.
Yeah, daughter brings all three to her wedding mm-hmm. because she finds a secret diary of her mother.
Oh, it's so good.
It's a great story,
I love
right?
this
like
movie
it's ridiculous.
So much.
Absolutely ridiculous. And it's like, it's fun. The songs are fun. Obviously, ABBA's like great. It's timeless. And you can tell the cast are having a blast because, as we know,
pissed.
They were absolutely drunk off their tits, like yeah. filming this film. They were having a fun time, and you can tell on screen. The second one, unfortunately, is filmed 10 years later, set 5 years later.
Yeah.
The matriarch of the family has passed away.
I know, that's why I can't.
So Meryl Streep's in this, even though she's nearly top billing, is in this for about 4 minutes max.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I watched this whole thing, God damn it, and she's in like the last scene.
That's why I didn't watch it yet.
It takes away the fun. Like it's the same thing with most legacy sequels these days. Because it is, I technically count as a legacy yeah. sequel. It's 10 years later. They have to add like a serious drama element to mm-hmm. it. Like these characters, like they're going through it, you know, like it's
yeah.
like, oh, like I, no. The fun of the first one was the silliness in camp, right?
The first time I watched Mamma Mia, the first one, yeah. I was maybe about 16, 17, 16 maybe. I was at my grandma. I went over to see my grandma and she said, and maybe we decided to watch a movie or something. She said, you just watch Mamma Mia. And I was like, okay, I've never seen this. I didn't quite appreciate ABBA yet at that age.
Mm.
And I didn't quite appreciate this film as much as my grandma did. I'd know she'd seen, I think she went with my mum when it came out. My grandma was pissing herself the entire time about things that aren't even funny. She's got tears. And you know when you watch something with someone and you don't find it quite as funny, so instead of appreciating the film, you just sit there confused.
Yeah.
As why, like, how are you crying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why was that
my first, unfortunately, my first take on Mamma Mia.
You've watched it since, right?
Oh, I've seen it since.
Yeah.
I've been like on a boat in Greece singing my heart out and then losing my phone not long later.
Did you do the Titanic scene like Colin Firth and Skarsgård do?
I didn't.
Oh, no, is that the second one? That's the second one. That's why.
There is an iconic photo of me.
That is the second one.
I wasn't drunk, actually, which you'd think.
I mean, it would fit.
Singing Mamma Mia until the phone went in the ocean. So.
Your throat. Yeah, I don't know. The first one's great.
But I love it. And her performance in
it. She can
sing. The winner takes it all.
Is that the one where she's just about to go up to
the
wedding?
On the hill?
Yeah, I was about to say, that's the standout one for sure. Like, she's singing a little heart out in that scene. What I will make fun of, though, is Pierce Brosnan singing SOS.
I was waiting for you. He's the worst casting.
I know why you've got him, right? He's James Bond and he's supposed to be like suave.
But he cannot sing. Everyone else in this film can sing.
Yeah, even like Colin Firth and Skarsgård.
Yeah.
Like they don't have really solos and they're in the background. That's fine. But he has a solo and it's like, oof, that's rough. He sings in the second one as well.
Oh, no.
It's so funny.
Oh, how do you go back and do that when you know the reception from the first one?
Right. I think that's why they put him in.
They needed someone to talk about it.
Yeah. Like there's a few double ups in the second one in terms of songs. They're still great. Don't get me wrong. Like the songs are still great, but it misses the fun heart of the first one. And you can tell that because Cher's in this one, in the second one, you can tell they just were like, oh, how do we put her in, like, in terms of story rise? She's the grandma. And then she just has like three or four songs at the end.
They needed something. They knew who the audience was.
Yeah. Also, it's very, the continuity between the second one and the first one, throw it out the window.
Well.
Like there's like how she meets the three boys. Because the second one's a movie in two parts. It's also got like the flashback to when Donna is meeting those boys in that time where she was with the three of them. And it's wonderfully played by Lily James. She does a fantastic job. She can sing. She's great. But in the first one, when it sets up when she's reading the diary, how she meets them, what happens, completely different to what happens in the second
one. The first one as well is based on a stage play.
Yeah.
Like, so it's
just a stock standard story, right?
They perfected it for a reason.
Yeah.
They didn't plan on a sequel.
No. And there's apparently, I looked up, they're looking at doing a third one. Which will be 2028 because it looks like they're doing it every 10 years. But you've already killed off Meryl Streep.
Okay, well.
And spoilers. Okay, I'm going to say it's still been out for 6 years. Like Amanda Seyfried's character finds out at the end of the film she's pregnant, right?
Of course.
Because she's like, oh, I feel so close to my mom now. Mm-hmm. Like it's the same place she was with me.
Yeah, yeah.
But at least this time we know who the father is. And like, okay. So I don't know how they're going to do the third one. Maybe it's the third one. Like maybe it is set maybe 20 years after the second one so that she can have – it's like the same story again.
They're going to run out of ABBA songs.
Well, they doubled up in the second movie.
They'd have to because all the classics are in the first.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a few double ups at the end, especially at the end with like the bigger ones they did again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yet again, it was – second one was fine, just – doesn't live up to the first one.
Yeah. And she's done a few ones where like musicals. Like she did Prom, which was like one of the worst films I've ever seen.
Into the Woods?
I loved Into the Woods.
I didn't get time this week, unfortunately.
She's so good in that. She plays the witch.
Yes.
Love it. But I hate James Corden, so I can't rewatch it.
James Corden.
I love everyone else in this. The whole thing is beautiful. Sondheim, it's fantastic. They put James Corden in it.
I know. That's how you ruin a film. Look at Cats.
Let's leave that. Let's not even go there.
Let's not go there.
But we got a lot to say about that film and I only watched 5 minutes.
You watched anything else?
I've watched a heap.
Yeah.
I've watched a heap. One of my favorites is Postcards from the Edge.
I was going to ask you about that. I haven't. Yeah, so I knew you had this actually physically.
Yeah, I bought it for $1.
Ching.
This is a Mike Nichols film again. So she'd worked with Mike Nichols in the past on the first Nora Ephron one.
Yeah.
With Jack Nicholson.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is written, the book and the screenplay is penned by Carrie Fisher.
Oh,
and
cool.
It's very, very loosely based on her own life. And because it's a story of an actress who's drug addicted, and she's got out of rehab and she has to work on a film. But in order to get out of rehab and work on the film, she has to live with her mother, played by Shelley MacLaine. It's a stunning, stunning cast. And it just goes through that like mother-daughter relationship and addiction and filmmaking and everything like that. Everyone thinks it's like super autobiographical, but everyone's come out and been like,
not really, no.
It's really, it's thematically accurate to Carrie Fisher's life, obviously, but in terms of so different, even to the point where she's like, yeah, my daughter used to sit there and go, that's not like grandma. So you know.
It's not the same. Very, it's like, it's got a loose similarity, but not.
But it's it's an amazing film, and both Meryl and Shirley MacLaine in it.
Kill it,
I have to lend it to you. It's fantastic. And if anyone hasn't seen it,
watch Safety Not Guaranteed. That'll be the next one.
If anyone's not seen it, go and watch Postcards from the Edge. It is well worth it. I think I watched this in uni. We're studying something. God knows what it was. We watched like the first 5 minutes, and I was like, okay, we'll have to go and watch this film.
Yeah,
and it's one of my favorites. Genuinely, very.
Something I forgot to mention about The Deer Hunter is she was behind the scenes. She was dating one of the actors at the time that was in it, John Cazale. This was his last film ever because he died shortly after this. So she was dating him. They were together. They had to film the scenes that where he was in at the start of the film, like before any of the other stuff happened, because they knew he had lung cancer because he was a chain smoker, but like he had lung cancer and wasn't curable. It had gotten into his bones, like bone marrow, whatever the cancer did. So he already knew he was going to die, and apparently this studio couldn't insure him to be in the film because they knew he was probably going to pass away at some point. Instead of him getting insured, Robert De Niro fronted all the money for it because they were friends as well to get him into the film because they wanted him in it. And it released after he passed away. And apparently like Meryl Streep was like at his bedside the whole time. And yeah, it was a really, really confronting part of her personal life was this film. Yeah.
That's really sad.
Yeah.
That's really touching when people come together in that way where they're like, you know,
yeah, like incredible for like Robert De Niro just to front the entire like insurance money for it.
I want you in this film. Because I want you in this film. Just because you're dying. Yeah. One last go in this crazy business. Oh.
Crazy, right? So yeah.
Oh, bit that
of,
hurts. That's
bit good. Of touching stuff from that film. It's a good, really good film. It's worth seeing.
I watched another one that was like completely random. But I'd bought like a 3-pack of Meryl films and it was just like in it. And it's called The River Wild.
I saw you watch this week.
Starring her
and looks like a weird
Kevin
cover.
Bacon. It's fantastic. So she's this mother who does like rapids, like water, like river rapid.
Yeah, yeah.
Canoeing type stuff.
Of course she does.
Anyway, she's really into it. It's her son's 10th birthday. He wants to go out on the river again. And they always invite dad, but dad never comes because dad's like uptight and a businessman and kind of a pussy. And, you know. That's the story there. Yeah, and like they have a little daughter, but she's like, I'm not going on the trip.
Yeah, she doesn't.
I'm going to stay with grandma or something. Anyway, so Meryl's like, whatever, I'm taking my son Rourke, whether you're coming or not. So they go out. She meets Kevin Bacon. They have a little flirt.
Yeah,
and, you know, she's like, oh, better not kind of thing. And then, you know, turns around and is like, oh my God, dad's there. He's come. He's come for the trip. But she's already kind of had eyes on Kevin Bacon, who's also like given like their kid like his hat, like you can have my like little fishing hat, whatever. So there's tension because both these boats are going off at the same time. So it's Meryl, her husband and the son, and then it's Kevin Bacon, John C. Reilly and some other guy. Benjamin Bratt's also,
I feel like,
in this film.
Simpsons did a parody of this. Yeah, honestly, this sounds familiar.
I think nasally, probably.
Yeah.
And then so they go off on the rapids, but then, and like, you know, Meryl's like helping them because she has been a guide over those rivers for years growing up kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it sort of gets to a point where, oh no, Kevin Bacon is a criminal and has a gun and wants to kill them and they must take him through the rapids.
Yeah, okay.
And it's just wild. You know, eventually like the dad, you know, steps up and becomes a man and they're like, yeah, you're savior and stuff. But it's so much fun. I thought it was going to be like one of those like kind of crappy adventure
like
films,
cringe.
But it's such a like 90s. Yeah, it's that.
Like,
it is
I love that
90s whole way
vibe.
Through.
I need that. Yeah, no, The Simpsons did do it. The episode's called Boys Scouts in the Hood. It's the two different dads taking the scout, two different scout crews. And I remember the scene they split.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. Fantastic.
But that's that one. I also watched Ricky and the Flash, which is a Diablo Cody film.
Yeah.
And it's about an aging rock star who loves her family but has just never been able to be the mother for them because she's a rock star. It's not the best film, but I didn't hate it. But it's got her daughter in it.
Her daughter plays her daughter.
Yeah. And that was fun just to watch the two of them, the dynamic
on screen.
And it was like it's a bit of a stupid film, but when those two bring the drama in it, it was really enjoyable to watch. So I don't think it's rated a lot worse than I found it. You know some of those films people are like, oh, it's like the worst. And you're like, well, it's not.
It's not.
It's okay. It's not like the best Meryl Streep performance, but it was fun to see her play like a weird rock star.
The cover reminded me of the cover for that David Brent movie, the spin-off movie from the UK Office. You know how they did that?
No.
Yeah. It's I don't know why they did it. Yet again, it was one of those like Ricky Gervais, why did you do this movie?
Have you seen Greta Gerwig's Little Women? Oh, I have seen that.
Yeah, unfortunate, right? Yes, we watched it for Little Women. We did some we did a Greta Gerwig episode.
Yeah, that one's that's Meryl.
It is. I forgot she's in it. Yes.
Mummy.
Yeah,
Mummy.
She does. Whatever she is. Yet again, I liked it. I forgot she was in it, to be honest.
Or is she the grandmother or something?
I think she's the grandmother. She's not the mom.
Oh, she's Aunt Marge.
Aunt Marge.
It's been a while since I've
Yeah, look.
Little Women.
There was a lot of episodes to watch that week.
A lot of films.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a lot.
I think that's probably the bulk of Meryl Streep stuff.
They're the bigger ones.
Yeah. Like she was in Don't Look Up, which was one of the worst films they made.
I don't know why she was in this.
I don't know why any of them were in this.
It was such a weird film. I get the story. I get why you're making it. But also this is bad.
It was just not good, right?
Yeah.
But I am
She was
really
the president? Yeah.
Right. Keen to like get through the rest of her stuff. Like I really want to watch Kramer versus Kramer, which I can't find anywhere at the moment.
I want to watch The Post.
The Post. Manhattan, I know it's Woody Allen and he's cancelled, but you know.
Yeah.
He brought good performances out of those actors, so I still kind of want to see it.
I wanted to watch, there was a Woody Allen film that popped up last night on Amazon. It was like A Rainy Day in New York.
Oh, that's one of his latest ones.
I know, I want to see it. There's the Chamolets in it and Selena Gomez.
Interesting.
And Elle Fanning?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
they're
in it.
I've seen a fair few
Woody Allen. I don't think I have.
But here's the thing. I went to uni during big cancel culture when the conversation was like, can we watch people's stuff?
I say yes.
And I say,
there's more than enough people that put their effort into this.
That's why I watch them. I don't watch it for the creeps that run the productions. But also Woody Allen was very good at what he did in terms of putting voiceover in films. He was like the guy.
Yeah.
So why can't I learn from a creep and then
you can
do better
it.
And then hopefully one day make some money off him?
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
Midnight in Paris is one of his best, in my opinion.
Mm,
it's so good. I've seen that one.
It's hard to watch his films, though. And Brett Goldstein said it, the guy that he's got his own podcast and he's in Ted Lasso and he's written a bunch of stuff. But his take, and I was like, damn it, you're right, is like Woody Allen played himself in a lot of these films. Mm. And he played like, oh, I'm the poor schmuck that can't get the girl. Like that's Annie Hall, right?
Yeah.
And you're supposed to feel sorry for him, which would be easier to do when those films were released and not now that we know that he's
a creep. We know the situation around
so
Woody
it's
Allen.
Like
yeah, again, I think you can appreciate it because of the amount of other people that went into creating it. Like you wouldn't watch Annie Hall because of just that, knowing that Diane Keaton, like
I watched her in Suits. Okay,
well, exactly right, like how well she did.
But yeah, and I want to watch
Christopher Walken's in
Christopher Walken.
It Christopher Walken
but yeah other getting back to other Meryl films, like I want to watch Out of Africa, August Osage County, like there's a bunch and I'm I kind of love that there are a lot that I haven't
You get to discover
seen.
More. Yeah.
Yeah, you've got like time to get through them, but.
Yeah, well, given she's in 132 films, I mean, I'm looking at the bottom, there's probably about, let's say 20 that are like docos and stuff. So 110 films. That's quite a bit. That's quite a bit to get through.
She's a legend, though. Yeah. To be in that many films over the amount of years that she's been doing it and still be revered as the one.
She's like the queen of...
She's the actors of all actors, right?
Actressing? Yeah. You know what I mean.
Acting as an actress. But like, are there any dudes doing it right now that are Meryl Streep? That you go, oh, they're Meryl Streep.
No, I don't think... Because she's so multifaceted. Mm-hmm. I think like obviously she's an incredible actress, incredible singer as well. And she's just involved in so much else behind the scenes.
They haven't managed to typecast her.
No, that's exactly right. She's so versatile.
Crazy, especially now that she's age, like she's, you know, in that older age. She's older, yeah. Right? It's like usually they play one thing. But Meryl's still got it.
She's still got it. That's the thing. She's been able to adapt to each kind of age demographic that she's been in, right? I think that's incredible.
And now she's on TV. She's in the tabloids.
Yes.
Have you seen those?
No.
Don't you know? No. Her and Martin Short are like together.
Are they a thing now in real life?
Well, not officially, but.
Basically officially.
You see the paparazzi photos?
No.
Oh, you got a deep dive.
It's not something from just Only Murders?
No, I promise. Like really? They are bringing each other as dates to carpets.
Oh, that's cute.
So cool.
Oh.
Like no one get in their business because like whatever, but like they're definitely.
They're great. I like both of them.
They're definitely having a good time together.
Good on them. Good on them. Yeah.
They're like the sweetest, but also paparazzi photos.
Came into fruition from that show, right? Mm-hmm. Like they obviously met each other properly on that. They've been working together closely for probably like 1 or 2, 3 years now from that show.
Yeah. If you didn't know, everyone go look it up. That's fantastic. So much fun. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I've been watching it unfold online for a bit and I'm like, this is cool.
That's cute.
Yeah. But that's pretty much us on Meryl Streep. We have so much more to get through. If you've got a favorite one that we didn't see, tell us which one is our next one to watch because I'll watch Meryl Streep forever.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for listening. Thanks for sticking with us. We got one more next week and then we're wrapping it up for the year, which is a good thing because this room is hot.
It gets sweaty during the day.
It is summer in Australia and we're in Queensland.
Yes.
But thank you so much. You can find us online at Binge List on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, or you can email us at bingelistandboxofficehits@gmail.com. If you really want to get into it, you can find us on Letterboxd, I'm sure.
Yes.
But that's about it. Have a good week, guys, and happy watching movies.
Thanks, guys.